This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Most people, even if they don't want to admit it, can remember the worst party. You know, the one where your teenage boyfriend got drunk and hit on everyone in the room. The one where you were so nervous that you peeked a bit early, threw up on your shoes and slept all night in the downstairs loo. The one where you said that awful thing about someone at work and they were standing right behind you. And what about the best? The one where your mate found an actual red carpet and rolled it out down the front steps onto the garden path. Or maybe it was your nan's 80th. The last one, perhaps, that you would remember. Or your baby's first party, with its fairy cake and single candle. Tonight on Late Night Woman's Hour, we're considering parties. The ones that live in legend and the ones that live in infamy. If you're listening to this, the chances are you're on your way to a party, or planning one, or trying to avoid one. Or maybe you've been to too many already this festive season and are heading home for your jammers and a box set. Whatever, tonight my guests are here to provide you with a field guide to parties. How to throw them, how to thrive at them, or, if needs must, merely survive them. In the studio with me are party organiser Fran Cutler, writer and former 3am girl Bryony Gordon, writer and former trailing diplomatic spouse Bridget Keenan, and broadly UK editor at Vice, Zing Sing. Welcome, one and all, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, so guys, can you define your ideal party in 3 words or perhaps a single sentence? Best party ever, Fran, what do you think?
Define it, I think, as in what makes it?
Yeah, or just if I said the best party of all time.
I think it's got to be the ones with the most amount of booze and the best and the best music. If you haven't got good music, you haven't got a party.
No.
And they get it so wrong. People think, oh, yeah, we'll just bring our iPods and we'll just put this on. It's got to have a lot of thought involved and it's got to be the predictable tunes that everyone wants to hear and everyone loves through the generations and through the ages. I think if it's too modern, it doesn't work. If it's too housey or it's too club, it doesn't. It's got to be that hits, those hits.
So it sounds quite chemical then, a music,
yeah,
that's going to make you react.
Definitely.
And obviously booze, that's going to do that for you. That's
so
it's quite
the
hedonic.
The two going
kind of
together.
Right, OK.
Get you on that dance floor.
All right, got it. Bryony, what do you think?
Well, I agree with Fran. I once put on Ludacris at a Telegraph office Christmas party. And I worked for Telegraph. And I cleared that.
We should
dance
probably
floor.
Clarify for the benefit of Radio 4 listeners who may not have heard the work of hip hop supremo Ludacris.
I love Ludacris. I mean, I like the best party, but I think as I've got older, a party also has to have food,
yeah,
because otherwise I don't remember it. I'm, as we speak, brutally hungover because I had people round for a party last night and failed to eat anything.
Rookie error.
But it needs to be, yeah, it needs to be just like super fun. And I think if you have the food and the booze and then you don't the next day, I always hate it when you have a party and then, and it's fun, but you spend the next day worrying about what you've done and what you've said, or, you know, you have hangxiety, as I call,
yeah,
it.
Hangxiety.
Yeah, and right, so I think it's really important. And I've never been able to do this. I'm always the last person standing. But I've learned as I've got older, you know, to leave.
To bail out gracefully.
Mm. I'm still learning how to do it.
So a sense of fun, a lack of regrets and leaving at the right time,
yeah,
for you, Bryony. Zing, what do you think? What makes a good party for you?
Well, I agree on the booze, but crucially, it has to be free. At the point where the party stops when people start running out of booze and having to make corner shop runs.
Oh, yeah.
And then the blue plastic bag brigade come in and all they want to do is drink Stella or like Red Stripe and put on Deep House on stereo.
That's the kind of 3 a.m. turning point for what was in my day. I mean, you know, you're a lot younger than me. This kind of sense of continuity that's still going on.
Oh,
it's
there's
touching.
Always going to be the group of men who turn up at 3 a.m. expecting to be handed over control of the stereo. They want to take off, they want to stop the Sugar Babes from playing, and they want to put on some very intellectual trance music.
They've got some IDM intelligent dance music ready to share.
They've got some very intelligent dance music at 4 a.m. in the morning, which is never what anyone wants. And that's usually the time where, you know, like Bryony said, you just start making the exit.
Time to check out. Okay, Bridget, what do you think? What makes a great
party? My experience of parties is totally different to all of yours, because I was married to a diplomat who became an ambassador, and the whole diplomatic world is just one long party. So you have national days. Just as an example, in London, there are 167 embassies, all of whom have national days. So that's 167 nights gone on parties. I was never posted in London because my husband was EU ambassador, but we were in Damascus and that had lots of embassies. And I'm really bad at entertaining. And so and when you do these diplomatic parties, you're not just allowed to do sort of
whatever.
We've only got the Ferrero Rocher adverts to go on, so you're going to have to sketch it out for us. What's it like?
You have to do a party that is representational. That means you have to do a grand party which makes your country, or in my case countries, because it's the European Union, look wonderful in the eyes of everyone else. So if you're posted to a country, as I was, like Kazakhstan, where the only vegetables when we got there were cabbage, potatoes, onion and carrots, and you're trying to put on a really glamorous party,
challenging.
You're really
for a buffet.
Plus, when you're an ambassador, you're allowed to have a cook. And that's wonderful, except you can never find a cook. And in Kazakhstan, I did have a cook. She was a professional cook, but she didn't speak English and I didn't speak Russian. So we had to communicate with sounds. Like if we wanted beef, I used to have to go, we'll have moo tonight. Or chicken was pluck, 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 pluck. Or chicken breast. You had to clutch your bosom. And so my experience is very different to all of yours.
And when did you know that it had gone well then? I mean, you know, the ideal, perhaps not the ideal party, since they were quite stressful for you by the sounds of it. But when you knew you'd got it right, was there a moment? What was that like?
Yes, if everybody was chatting. I have got a really terrible party story. I don't know whether I should tell it now or later, but should I tell it now?
Tell it now. Get it out.
We were posted to Syria and we were quite new there. And my husband decided to give a dinner for 30 or 40 people. I can't remember the exact amount. And it was in a hotel because I said, I can't do this. I can't do a dinner for 30. And at home, I mean, I can't hardly get the food on the table for four. So he said, OK, we'll have it in a hotel. But then the president's son was killed in an accident and all hotel entertainment was banned. So we had to do it at home. And I had a Filipina maid that I was training. And for some unknown reason, I decided to do Thai food, which I've never done in my life before. All the electrical implements, there was an outage, electrical cut, and all the implements went wrong. I'd never used that tough stalk thing, lemongrass. I'd never used that, and I'd just cut it into big chunks and shoved it in. So I had to sieve all the sauces because it was like eating thistle. Anyway, the final thing, we were in total chaos, this poor maid and I, she was called Marcel, and suddenly an enormous rat appeared in the kitchen. And so Marcel took a broom and beat it to death in the kitchen. And the rat blood went all over all the dishes we were cooking. And it was a nightmare. But my husband anaesthetised everybody with alcohol, and we somehow got some food on the table. And I think it was a success because everybody had drunk a lot.
Just surviving, that sounds like a success, to be honest.
You needed a drink after that.
It was terrible.
Just getting through that one. Fran, you are the party queen. I mean, can a party happen anywhere with anyone? What's the optimal amount of people? There's five of us here
tonight. Yeah, we could definitely have a party here. Definitely. I think if you're feeling it, somebody... You know that feeling where you just feel a bit naughty and you can start...
You've got to get it out.
There's a group of you and you think, oh, God, yeah, let's have a little drink. And then that little drink, then you start getting really silly and that leads to the party. And that party never seems to stop for a couple of hours, going on to maybe 3 hours, and then you order more drink and more girlfriends might arrive. I think it's sometimes better when it's just girls, those sort of parties.
And why is that, do you think?
I don't know. It's when you all get together because, you know, most of the time we've all got really busy lives. We're all doing so many different things. And coming together, you sort of really relish that and you really appreciate that. And you get so excited. I think oh, my God, I'm so excited to see you. Drink. Another one. Then all the stories come out of what you haven't, you know, what you've been up to about. And then it just goes on.
Yeah. OK. What do you think, Bryony? I mean, for Fran, she says almost it could be even more special when it's just women together. What do you reckon about that?
I could have a party with anyone. If I've got my gid on, as I call it.
So you call it
gid on. I know. And I'll start feeling giddy. Like,
yes.
When I wake up in the morning almost and I'll think this is dangerous. And it's like I feel it in my fingers, I feel it in my toes.
You get the kind of crackle.
Yeah, and it's dangerous. And then I know that it's not going to end well.
Is this something you can wake up with on like a rainy Tuesday? Or is this restricted to the weekend?
No, never. I never party at the weekend.
What?
Because I'm tired. Because I've been partying during the week.
Honestly.
It's much more fun to go out partying during the week because you can have a hangover. You can be paid to have a hangover. I don't have to do childcare during the week because the child's at school. And I can, you know, go and I shouldn't be saying this because I'm going to get the sack. But I think, I don't know, there's something I like weekends. I really like downtime. I like for going for long walks. I like watching Strictly. I like, you know, I like the sort of takeaway.
Eggs and brunch and the healthy stuff.
Nesting, yeah. And during the week, I you know, that's when you get your gid on. But I can get my gid on a Monday night. It just hits me.
Zing, what do you think about this? Are you a kind of weekday partier or is it weekend?
So I used to be a weekend partier. So I used to do starting on Saturdays, going all the way into Sunday mornings. But now I'm a big fan of the Friday night party where you just go straight from work. You maybe get a takeaway on the way over just to line your stomach, but not too much. Mm-hmm. And then you just go for it. And then you wake up on Saturday at 2 p.m. and you're like, I've still got the weekend. You go to the British Museum.
Well, this is it. You don't still have the weekend because it's 2 p.m. So you're so young, aren't you? Because this is the thing that also has changed now is that I used to sleep till like 6 in the evening, you know. I would just the whole day would be gone. But actually, I find a hangover is much better once you just get up.
Ebb and flow, and obviously, it kind of it changes through the years. I think I certainly remember those kind of wild nights out like that myself. But I mean, to an extent, I suppose many of you guys have combined work and partying professionally, or it's been part of what you do for a living. Zing, you know, you mentioned those kind of big long nights out, and I know that you cut your teeth at some very cool titles, Dazed and Wonderland. Land and Vice, and you're now an editor at the equally cool digital channel Broadly. Has socialising been a big part of your professional life?
Yes, well, I was just at a Dazed party last night. So they moved out from their old offices, which they've had since I think the 90s, into a very swanky office on the Strand, and they just had a lock-in. They just turned the old office into a club. And I remember walking in and thinking, God, this place works a lot better as a club than an office. And like you said, all you need is free booze, some good tunes, people playing Britney. And it is funny because you think, you know, the coolest parties shouldn't be playing, you know,
obvious
Blur
stuff.
And like Pulp, but they really should, because that's the stuff that everyone remembers, and that's what they think about when they think about their childhood when they're younger, when they loved partying and loved being a bit naughty and having a drink. That's the stuff, sort of stuff that you want to listen to.
I was going to say that I thought Blur and Pulp were cool. I
it's gone all the way back in.
They were cool when I was young.
All right. Well, tell me about your party preparation. I mean, how much is required? If it is for a party that you're doing on your own time and it's not necessarily kind of to do with work, it's just a night out. I mean, how long does it take to get ready? Fran, what do you think?
Oh, right. So, as you saw my Halloween party.
Huge Halloween bash.
I mean, that was...
Pictures on the internet available. How many people?
Well, it was my costume, the whole thing... took 6 hours for the makeup, and then the headdress was this huge big sort of Spanish with roses. It's Day of the Dead,
sort of kind of Dia del Muerto.
And that took so long, and then the outfit, then getting into the outfit and the corset, and then getting in the car to the other side of London. I mean, it was a real big setup. I mean, obviously, it doesn't take that long usually. I give myself an hour usually.
So if it was just on your own time and it wasn't going to be such a big production.
Hairdressers in the day, get back. I don't really wear much makeup. bath that, and when I'm in the bath, I plan my outfit.
Mm-hmm. What about all the food and drink?
Not
and all
really
of that?
Food. I don't do food before. I might have a quick smoothie, then out.
And there wouldn't be food at the party?
Depends what it is. If it not, no, not really. People, my lot don't really care about the food. They want to get straight to the drink. They've eaten before and they want to get straight to that dance floor. Straight on the cocktails.
So, Fran, you can be door-to-door in an hour. Bridget, what do you think? How long do you leave yourself to get ready for a party?
Oh, well, it's less and less as I've got older. I used to have a whole thing that I couldn't go out without my makeup absolutely perfect, but now I'm in my 70s, so I don't really care. That's the one good thing about getting older. Now, I do care, but not that much.
So, to some extent, is your party preparation, or was it when you were hosting a lot of kind of the diplomatic dues, was it about anticipating who was going to be there,
yes.
How you were going to need to kind of interact with them and how
yes.
you were going to have to behave.
Yes, and how to, if conversations got dangerous or difficult, how to steer them away. I remember being at a party with the Russian ambassador and the American ambassador and the New Zealand ambassador, and they all had a terrific row about nuclear testing in the Pacific, and I had to break that up somehow.
Oh my word, what did you do?
I think I talked about something completely irrelevant and took their minds off it all. But once I talked about markets, because everybody was silent, and I thought I should talk about markets, because everybody knows something about markets. So I started talking about markets, but nobody joined in, and I went on and on about markets here, markets there. And then the Indian ambassador fell asleep, and then I started talking about vegetables in markets. I got completely hypnotised by this market. And then I started talking about potatoes and saying how you could get new potatoes or muddy baking. And the Indian ambassador woke up and said, fascinating, and then went back to sleep.
So you probably wouldn't recommend veg chat.
Not veg chat.
As a small talk topic.
I never found the key to the chat.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to be able to tell us that. There is a surefire subject to kind of open people up and get people talking.
Mostly families, because diplomats have all left families at home. So that was a pretty good source of chat.
Okay. Bryony, tell me about your party preparation, because you described that feeling of waking up and having this kind of crackling energy and just wanting to have a bit of a do and knowing you've got to get it out, and that can happen to you on a Wednesday morning. Are you ready at the drop of a hat? Can you just turn it around? And
yeah, I'm not high maintenance at all. You can't see me now, but I can like do my makeup in the dark in the cab. No problem.
Okay.
So I'm not, it's more the sort of like, my preparation. Oh, I like what we had our office Christmas party the other night, and we went on the pre-lash, as we called it.
The pre-lash?
Yeah. We went to the party, we went to a pub. And actually, I'm going to get sacked, it was better than the party. Because you kind of, you've got the gear, you're anticipating, it's all exciting. But also I think, my planning is, if we're going to have a party, if we're going to go out, I want it to be a place that... when I have a drink, I like to have a cigarette, okay? So shoot me. I'm not condoning it. It's not good for you. But I do like it. And some people do, like people tend to, if they are going to smoke, they're going to do it when they've
had a few. I don't smoke, but I'm always outside with the smokers, because often that's where the interesting conversations happen.
That's where the fun is.
When people plan for parties at places that you're not allowed to take your drink out, with a cigarette, that's it. Stone, game over, I'm off.
Fran,
I was just going to ask, Fran, I mean, you are Britain's most famous party planner. Tell me about how you get a gig like that. I mean, how did it start for you? It sounds like a dream job.
It's, like everything, it always sounds much better than it is. I'm not out every night. I don't go to loads and loads of parties because it's actually work for me. So at parties, you can't drink at your own parties when you're working for big clients. How did I get the job? Years and years ago, I was a DJ manager.
Okay.
And I looked after a lot of DJs. And it's just sort of organically happened that you look after DJs, they're playing at parties, you go to see them play, you take your friends with you, and people say, oh, you came last week to so-and-so, do you think all your friends will want to come back to this other party that your DJs are playing at next week? And we're like, yeah, another free party with loads of free drink. Yeah. And it just sort of organically happened like that, really. And, then you're sort of 15 years down the line and you're doing it slightly different and on our higher sort of level, and with budgets and great brands and great magazines and interesting people, and you travel the world and it's fun.
I mean,
really
it looks like fun, and
that
obviously
is fun.
That's part of the point, and your job is to kind of show that.
And it's never the same.
What's the most exotic one you've ever done?
Brazil. We do a lot of the AMFAR, which is an amazing charity. I participate in helping that every year in São Paulo. And that's been going, we've been doing that for 5 years.
And I mean, some of these dues are incredibly lavish. What would you say is the most elaborate party that you've ever thrown? And how long did it take to organise?
God, well, I can actually organise a party in a couple of days.
Oh, really?
In a week, yeah. I mean, that's my sort of skill. Because it's just calling, getting things organised. But I mean, the lavish ones are probably, I mean, obviously people's birthday parties, private birthday parties, which was Ricardo Tisci from Givenchy. I organised his 40th in Ibiza, and Kanye sang, and we had the biggest DJs from around the world playing, and everyone turned up, from Zac Efron to Justin Bieber to all the Kardashians. That was mega. But then the AMFAR ones in Brazil are really big fashionista parties with Marc Jacobs and Matt and Marcus, who are really famous photographers, Naomi Campbell, Kate Moss, amazing people. And that's in a private property where the guy has his own zoo in his house.
Wow. My word.
But he lends it to the charity.
And he lends it to the charity, and he's an architect. So you're sitting there, and you can see these amazing exotic birds and lemurs and llamas.
Incredible.
And it's just beyond amazing.
So the sky's the limit by the sounds of it.
It can be. Yeah, it can be. I'm lucky I can choose the ones I want to do. Mm-hmm. So I could say, oh, yeah, my God, that's going to be amazing. I really want to be involved in that, and maybe even go after that job and pitch for that.
Okay.
But there's nobody really that sort of does what... Oh, I'm going to say that and then everyone's going to say, I do what you do. I think I choose my things very carefully.
So it's a bespoke service, really?
Yeah,
client to client.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, it's definitely bespoke.
Would you be the person who rings Beyoncé to ask her to sing?
Yeah.
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 Have you had to ring Beyoncé to ask her to sing?
I've rung much higher and bigger and famous girls than that, really. And men. I mean, in the one in AMFAR, we have Cher perform. Mary Jane Blige. I mean, Cher to me is like
the
goddess.
She's above all.
And so beautiful and so kind and so generous. And she's
also best Twitter feed out there.
Is just amazing. And comes on stage and so generous for the charity. And you know, so people like that, when you meet people like that, Ricky Martin, we have he was gorgeous,
La Vida Loca.
His body and him dancing on stage, Mary Jane, they've had everyone playing there, but Cher
was an all-time highlight.
I was just like that, oh my gosh, you're just a goddess.
Bryony, you combined work with partying when you became a 3 a.m. girl.
Yes.
And I mean, what was that like for you? At first, I've read your account of it in your first book, and at first it kind of seemed like a dream job, and then it got a bit much.
I hated it. I was really young. I was 21, and it just, like, it wasn't for me, because I like going to I like being at parties, but I don't like working at parties. And I was not really very good at going up to, like, celebrities and sort of, you know, asking them questions. I saw, this is rubbish. I don't want to do this. I quit after 3 months. I was, like, the world's worst 3 a.m. girl.
I don't know what a 3 a.m. girl
It was a gossip column on The Mirror for a
I
while.
See.
And
right.
I went back to The Telegraph. And then I kind of combined partying and work in another way, in which that they sort of... One of the worst things that could have happened to me, really, is that they basically gave me a column to write about being a single girl about town. I was a sort of like co-op version of Carrie Bradshaw. And
that is unfair on yourself.
No, I'm
that
joking.
Sounds great.
But and so I legitimately was allowed. I would go past. I mean, I don't think I would never write about the really kind of like out there stuff. Because I didn't want to get sacked. Because this is the theme running through my conversation today. but I was, you know, I was out till six. I'd sometimes just come straight into work. Mm-hmm. And because I would turn my escapades into like witty copy. I was always like the kind of performing monkey. You know, oh my God, I can't believe you did that kind of thing. Yeah. Oh my God, you've got to write about this. So I kind of legitimately felt I was kind of being paid to party and come up with hilarious anecdotes.
Yeah.
And you know, and I'm still a bit like that. I still kind of feel that I have to, you know, go to a party and perform.
And was there a point where you knew that it had got a bit much and that the partying wasn't fun? It wasn't, you weren't having a good time?
I think my 30th birthday, and I was snorting lines of cocaine off a car bonnet because I'd locked myself out of my house, and I'd invited the entire pub back to my flat. And then we were up. I mean, I developed a bit of a drug habit in my 20s, which I've written about, and I'm quite frank about it. And I'm, when you're trying to amuse other people, but you're hurting yourself doing that, that's no longer a good party. That's when you have to leave the party.
And you know, you've, as you say, you've written very frankly about that, and your kind of transition out of that. And how does it work when it actually comes to having fun again, though? Like, what that party persona that you, I think, describe as the life and soul, and someone who's kind of always willing to do whatever to be the almost make the joke happen, you know, and be the butt of it if necessary.
Yes, I still do that, but I don't do it as often. I still go out and have a laugh. I'll still, you know, I mean, I won't go out and snort cocaine off anything.
I'm glad to hear
that. I still go out and I like a drink and I like a party. I just don't allow myself to do it as often. Because I partied so hard in my 20s and my early 30s, I quite like being boring now. So that for me is the party, is going home and watching box sets with my husband. Mm. Sounds really lame. But my husband and I are really good at having parties at home.
That sounds excellent to me. That sounds fine.
We love to sit in the garden. There's nothing we love more, even in the winter, bleak midwinter, than sitting in the garden, drinking and chain smoking. We have like parties for two.
Yes.
And those are my favourite, because actually it's like, you know, we don't have to get a cab home.
Seeing you were last night at a party, you were at a party in a building that was about to be demolished, I think it's fair to say that you are still very much out there and can put us in touch with what the young people are doing on the panel today. So tell me a bit about that, because one of the things that I keep reading is that young people are going out less and less. And I'm sure broadly, you know, you've covered this and read about this kind of idea of, you know, millennials as being quite isolated in their little digital bubbles and not actually socialising in the way that, you know, people of my age and older might have.
So I guess the myth is that, you know, we're too busy Snapchatting each other to actually go out and interact and speak with other people, let alone go to parties. Actually, I mean, I kind of think there's a function of it getting a lot more expensive to actually go out and, you know, have a couple of drinks. Like, a drink now costs so much more than, you know, when you were my age. And for the record, I'm 28. I feel like everyone's referring to me like I'm 15. But I'm not. I'm not a very advanced teenager, although I would like to be. So I think that everyone sort of thinks that millennials don't go out as much. But I think what they do is they sort of spend money on big things. So, for instance, they might spend loads of money going to Glastonbury and having an amazing time and needing a month to recover from it. They're less likely to go out and they're less likely to, you know, go out every single weekend to get on the lash, because getting on the lash is so much more expensive now.
And also, I mean, gentrification, and we know, I mean, I'm sure Fran knows all about this, that, you know, clubs are closing left, right and centre all over the country. It's a big problem in the nighttime industry.
And all the smaller clubs that you might have, you know, gone on a Friday night too, and, you know, you think, I don't want to go to a massive club, I don't want to go to Fabric or something, I just fancy a little dance somewhere. Those clubs are shutting down now in enormous numbers.
Neighbourhood clubs, which used to be part of the course.
Why are they closing?
Well, I mean, I think it's a combination of the council, you know, if you live in a residential area and you've got 20 clubs down the main strip, that's terrible news for you. Mm. And, you know, the council also has to find some way to make money off it. So, you know, they make licensing a lot harder to acquire.
It's a nationwide problem. Yeah. It's quite an interesting one. And there are a few different factors, certainly gentrification. Mm-hmm. And as Zing says, you know, kind of councils and people's particular kind of legislation. But there is a behavioural shift as well, I think. And, you know, the idea of going to super clubs and the kind of super clubs of the 90s, which we would in the front, that's gone, right?
That's gone. There's nothing like that except in, I suppose, like Ibiza and places like that. They're still going there.
Mm. But even they're closing down, aren't they?
Well, Space has, but I mean, you've still got your big super clubs. I think it's really sad. I love going to clubs, the speakeasy, those sort of 100, 200 venue type clubs for me, or everything, when you're all in one room and you're in the round, you can see what everyone's up to, you're dancing, you're chatting, you're going around the room. That to me is my best night out. Mm. I love that.
Zing, tell me a little bit about what the coolest night out in London is at the minute. What kind of party is it? Are we talking...
We'll go there afterwards.
If the big super clubs are over, and or at least, you know, there aren't so many of them, what are people doing? I've heard about these, like, big box raves that kind of go on in disused, out-of-town, you know, warehouse shops and things like that.
Yeah, so Vice did a documentary about these illegal raves. And I think a lot of much younger people are going out to those raves because, you know, it's in, you know, they already know they're doing something bad, so they might as well do something worse.
Totally.
So there's an apocryphal myth. I love this story. Basically, a girl tried to climb over a fence into a London to get into a London warehouse party. It was a squat rave. She tore off her finger and left it dangling on top of the fence. Obviously, this being 2015.
Party this way, that's not good, is it?
So obviously, this being 2015, everyone took pictures of the finger. So there were loads of pictures of this girl's finger just like hanging on the top of this fence.
Apparently,
she just continued partying. And I want to find this girl because for me, she is like, she is a goddess. She's able to continue.
Call her hardcore raver.
The three-fingered
like Cinderella instead of the right glass slipper.
Raverella. She is Raverella.
So I think there's a, you know, there's a healthy culture of people still trying to put on illegal raves in warehouses.
This is very big,
Did the finger have nail varnish on it?
Oh, no. Oh, they should have fingerprinted it, don't you think?
How could she get a phone to work again if she didn't have
the nail varnish?
Is this like, can we find these pictures on Twitter? On social media.
Yeah, I think you can.
Sure I want to.
We'll look it up after.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'm feeling a bit sick.
Bridget, I mean, we're talking a bit about generational differences. I mean, tell me a little bit about cultural differences, because as you mentioned earlier, I think you lived in six countries and on four continents over the course of 20 years.
Yes.
How different was it socialising in, say, Kazakhstan, the Gambia, Barbados?
Well, of course, the diplomatic community remains the same pretty much everywhere you are. But I just wanted to say that I've never been to a club. The last club that I went to was Annabelle's in the 60s, where you didn't even dance separately. I mean, you were dancing as a couple.
It's still going.
Is it?
Yeah.
Still there.
It's amazing.
And sort of, you know, and you danced. And I loved that dancing. You sort of got closer and closer until you were dancing cheek to cheek, which I didn't think you
believed. I was going to say, that sounds all right.
And then I disappeared off the scene. But in my day, we used to drink a lot. I mean, we drank a hell of a lot. And I can remember driving across Hyde Park and closing one eye so that I didn't see everything double, because there was not much legislation. I mean,
you could drink and drive.
Nobody even thought about it. We thought it was probably quite good for you to drink and drive. I don't know. We thought smoking was good for you. My mother used to say, oh, you're looking a bit tired, darling. Have a cigarette and a gin and tonic. And
amazing. I wish people would say that now.
And so I smoked, but then I gave up smoking, and then I joined this, followed my diplomat husband. So diplomatic entertaining is pretty much the same. But then in Kazakhstan, my daughter had a birthday when she'd come out to stay with us, and we went to some weird club. That was a club, but it wasn't a dancing club. It was some sort of eating club. And the cabaret was a naked man in a loincloth, and people threw darts at him.
Oh!
And I mean, they were going into his skin.
Any part of him?
He turned his back.
Oh, my God.
He was a sort
of
strong
man. I think that was an S&M.
And it was just absolutely terrible. It was like going to a bullfight, but with a human instead of a bull.
My word.
It was horrible. I think my daughter's regretted that birthday party ever since. It was really quite horrible.
You've seen some things, haven't you?
Yes. You really
have. How old was she? Was she 12?
Oh, I think she was...
I think
she was about 22 or something.
We came for Mr. Wimpy. This is not what we expected.
Yeah.
No, I think she was about 22. But all of us were creeped out by the whole thing. It was so horrible.
What about these days? I mean, as you mentioned, you know, you're in your 70s now, I think. Do you still kind of like to throw a party? Is that something that you do?
No, my idea of a party now, my idea of a really enjoyable evening is pretty much like you wanting to watch a box set with my husband.
Mike Brown.
Because these parties took up so much time. I read somewhere that the British ambassador to Rome and his wife had not had an evening in together by themselves for 3 years. Mm. That's the degree of party in a big embassy. That never happened to me because we were not posted to Rome or any huge capital cities. But I think my idea of a really nice party is six people that I like cooking a dinner and sitting around the table and having a chat.
Okay.
That's
we
my
sort
idea.
Of agree
dinner
on the same thing, yeah.
For Fran, for you, that would be perfect.
But maybe a bit more. I like
eight people.
Yeah, so yeah, 8 to 20 girls getting very raucous. Mm-hmm. You know, rolling all over the floor, having a real good time, but lots of alcohol.
Can I come to your next
yes,
party?
Yes, you can. Definitely.
I'm not coming because I don't want to.
Brian is on the guest list. I'm Brian is
plus
one.
You don't have to roll on the floor. You can sit. You're
can I sit in a chair yeah, with yeah. arms?
Can I just raise the idea of party anxiety? Because obviously, you know, around the table tonight, I have some very accomplished partiers, but not everybody finds it easy. Some people get very anxious in the run-up to a party. Is that anything that any of you can relate to or have experienced?
Yes.
Fran?
I've got friends that get very anxious, and what they do is they say things, oh yeah, I know that party's coming, but yeah, I'm not going to drink. No, I'm not going to drink at that party. And actual fact, I'm leaving at 10 o'clock. So at 10 o'clock, just tell me I've got to go. Oh yeah, cool. 10 o'clock, they're paralytic in some corner. You're telling them to leave. I'm not leaving. I'm not going to leave at 10. I never said I was leaving. I said, you've had the worst anxiety about this party for months and months, and now you're not going, no, I'm having the best time of my life. I think the more you preempt something, you've just got to let yourself go with these things.
Okay. So it's just about kind of trying to
relax into it. Relax into it.
Sing, what do you think?
If everything gets very bad and overwhelming, just hide in a toilet stall. I've done that before. Just say the toilet stall is my safe space. Mm-hmm. As long as there are multiple toilet stalls and you don't have people banging on the door, and you just sit down on a toilet seat and you just like meditate.
Take a minute
to gather your thoughts and then come out. I've hidden in a toilet stall for about 20 minutes just because the party was too empty and I was too anxious to go out and try and be that person.
I've done yes. that at work's dues, at like Phew. Kind of big functions. Every now and again, I will sometimes retreat and just have a minute.
Really?
My worst party was a fancy dress party years and years ago before I married. We had to go dressed in as historical figures, and I went as Mary, Queen of Scots, in a sort of big black velvet dress.
Quite elaborate, yeah.
And because I do what your friend does, which is I'm so nervous about the party that I drink a lot at the beginning and then get completely legless. And at this party, which was given by my assistant at the Sunday Times, which was so embarrassing because she was years younger than me, I went into the lavatory to throw up because I had too much to drink. And then I could hear all the people in the lavatory, and they were all friends. And I knew if I came out of the lavatory, they'd all heard me throwing up. So I just stayed in the lavatory for the rest of the night.
And then dressed as Mary Queen.
And then at about 2 o'clock in the morning, when everybody had gone home, the party was on a boat, which also helped to make
awful,
me sick.
Awful.
Wow. Awful.
I've had a terrible experience at a boat party. Yeah.
All experiences on boats are terrible. And then I had to flit along the embankment dressed as Mary Queen of Scots at 2 o'clock in the morning trying to find a taxi home.
Oh Bridget, dignity. Always dignity.
Awful.
I mean, what about party no-nos? Obviously, that kind of covers some of the bad experiences. Mm-hmm. Are there party crimes that should never be committed? And if so, what are they? Bryony?
I think that all
is fair.
All party crimes you can pardon, because we've all been there. And I think that thing of, you know, and that thing of waking up and going, oh God, did I say that? Did I do that? And I think everyone is waking up thinking that.
Yes.
You know, okay. I mean, often I was the only one who did do that thing, who threw up or who blacked out or who, I don't know, did something unspeakable to someone. Not unspeakable, sorry.
Yes, unspeakable.
Always, you know, but I think, you know, in a party, it's like you're excused because it's you know.
So it's the circle of trust, essentially.
Yeah.
Stuff happens.
It's almost like saying what goes on the road stays on the road. I think at the party, you shouldn't really discuss. And something bad after, you just want to discuss all the good stuff.
You're totally let people off.
If you were going to write a field guide to party survival for a Radio 4 Late Night Woman's Hour listener who is in the middle of the slings and arrows of the outrageous party season and just wants to get through it, what tips would you give? How best to survive these do's and prosper?
Bryony, you'd be good at that.
Well, look after yourself. Like, don't, you know, just do look after yourself. Eat before you go. If you're not going to eat there, eat, always just shove a sandwich down you. Mm.
I think that's the best tip ever.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Eating before lining your stomach.
Yeah. But also then the next day, get up and go for a brisk walk and just look up, do a bit of, it sounds so sanctimonious, don't I? Do a bit of exercise.
No, not at all. I think
it's sensible. Blow, you know that phrase, blowing the cobwebs out? Like, yeah. I think that is really, yeah. I mean, I'm quite hungover now. So, you know, tomorrow I will go for a run.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Zing, you mentioned earlier when we were talking about the idea of waking up at 2 p.m. and more or less rolling straight into the British Museum. Is that your approach? That's never happened to me.
That was sort of more of a wishful thinking on my part.
Okay.
The last time I woke up at 2 p.m, I ordered 2 Deliveroos both for myself. And then when I looked into the bag and there were 2 sets of cutlery, I was like, oh God, you don't understand anything about me at all. my advice is drink water.
Yes,
and I don't know if it's just me not being 21 again, but now I've started to realise that when I wake up after a night out, I just look like someone's just sucked the moisture from my skin, and it's not pleasant. I think that actually helps to ward off the hangover if you just drink a small glass of water between actual drinks.
Mm. Okay.
Yes. Awesome.
And then a bottle of water when you get back in.
Massive rehydration.
I love all the advice, but when you're 5 vodka and tonics in...
To the wind.
Yeah, you forget
on a table. It's Motown night. Yeah, the DJ's playing your song.
Pace is the thing, isn't it? You've got to pace yourself. But whether you can pace yourself is another thing. Easier said than done.
Fran, I know that you're also, you have the kind of the yin and yang thing going in that you are a fan of a detox afterwards. Like you think that it's quite important to observe the ebb and flow and not try to kind of stay with it and party all the time.
I mean, it's only happened because of the years of partying. And I've realised that it's got to be a yin and a yang. You've got to, if you want to have fun, you've got to look after yourself. And another good thing for a hangover is a B12 shot. So you can get these people to come to your house that give you intravenous.
Hang on, what? Intravenous?
Yes. Intravenous
B12. Who are these people?
That drip.
How expensive are they?
They're 100 and something pounds.
I suppose if you're
and you go online and you can get them to your house and they come
in. What are they called? Doctors?
They're proper doctors and nurses. I forget the company because I can't obviously advertise on the radio.
I think best not.
Yeah, but they're amazing. So you feel bad. The lady comes over to your house, inserts the needle, you sit there for 10 minutes and you feel as a new person.
I thought you were just going to be like drinking juice and doing a bit of yoga. I didn't think a random lady off the internet was going to come and give you an injection.
I don't think I'm getting done that.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing and I get it done quite regularly.
Ooh. Heavens above. Bridget?
I mean, no, I would never have an injection from a random lady on the internet. I think I would just like to stay in bed a bit longer, not go to the British Museum. But I think somebody touched earlier on the sort of guilt you feel. Mm. You just, if you've got a really bad hangover, you just want to cry and think of all the what a bad person you are. Mm.
That is true. It's the terrible kind of. I'm thinking of obviously it being Christmas, The Apartment, the greatest Christmas film of all time,
God,
and
that,
you know, Shirley MacLaine's hangover in that, where she's in the depths, in the doldrums,
yes,
kind of thing. So maybe getting out of the house is key. As,
maybe,
you know,
maybe
Brian
it is key. Yes.
It's absolutely key. Do not stay under your duvet. Mm-hmm. Under the duvet,
the shame spiral will always go down.
You're basically lying in your own sweat and self-loathing. And I'm just, however bad it feels, just get up and
fling it aside. Yeah.
Embrace the day. And, you know, it's probably no one died. Hopefully.
Well, hopefully. That's what they all say.
That mantra, nobody has died, you're okay. That is such a good thing. Because it's, why feel guilt about having a good time?
You do. So,
I know, but you
some,
do.
It's kind of
free Anglo-Saxon something or
other. Yeah, we feel so guilty about having fun.
I think we're
enjoying ourselves.
And on a serious note, actually, it's sometimes often women face more disapproval than men.
Absolutely.
Because overdoing that, don't they?
I used to get it all the time. Oh, Bryony, if you carry on like this, you'll never get a husband. I'm like, what?
Well, I've carried on like that and I never have a husband.
But, you know, you probably have more fun.
Oh yeah, I've had
and
a lot of fun.
I do think it's women, I always think those pictures that they run in newspapers around the Christmas party season of people, you know, on the streets of various
bench girl. I think the classic one.
Do you know what I dread one day opening the paper and realising I am bench girl. That's when
I think we've all been bench girl.
Oh yeah,
maybe I'm proud of that.
Yeah,
I'm proud of being bench girl.
Maybe taking ownership of bench girl is key.
I feel bad admitting this, but I've never felt guilty.
Oh, I love you for that. Yeah, don't.
I feel paranoid that I've said something wrong, but I've never felt guilty. I don't know why. I just feel like no one should be forced to feel bad because they've had some fun.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, with that in mind, a happy new year and thank you very much. My wonderful guests, Fran Cutler, Bryony Gordon, Bridget Keenan and Xing Xing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been fun.
That was really fun. Yay! I feel like a drink now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.